From Studio 22, you're listening to Servcast with your hosts William Lamb and Tyler Shores. Servcast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William and Tyler.
Hey, welcome back to Servcast. My name's Tyler, and we're so glad you're joining us today. And today on the podcast, Christian, our student guest host, is back with William. And together they interview Nicole Lim, who is the co-founder and international director for Freely in Hope. Freely in Hope is an organization that has the mission of restoring dignity with survivors of sexual violence through holistic education and platforms for dreams to be fulfilled. In addition with Nicole, she was actually with us at Lee University in Chapel not too long ago. They discuss in this interview a little bit of her story as she gets to this organization, but they also kind of round out the conversation by talking about ways that we can get involved to fight against the cycle of sexual violence. So I really enjoyed this conversation. I think you will as well. And so that's coming up next.
Hey, Christian, we are so glad to welcome Nicole Lim to Servcast. Hey, Nicole, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
And you are calling from where today?
Calling from Nairobi, Kenya.
Nairobi, Kenya. Now, Christian, you remember Nicole. She was at Lee University back in the fall of 2016. She spoke in a chapel. What's one of the things that stuck out in your mind when Nicole was with us at Lee?
Yeah, wow. Nicole just has this spirit of empowerment. You know, she had this passion, you know, to give voice to the broken and the oppressed. And, you know, she got to live out her passion, and that's pretty cool.
Good. And we're glad that you can join us today, Christian, because, hey, Nicole, we got some questions for you. We're going to kind of unpack it and get started. Are you ready? Good deal. Hey, tell us what Freely in Hope is. Now, bear in mind, when people listen to our episode, they'll be able to go to your website. They'll be able to actually go back to that talk that you shared at Lee University. But for those who may not have a reference, what is Freely in Hope and what is it that you guys do?
Yeah, so Freely in Hope is a faith-based nonprofit organization that equips survivors and advocates to lead in ending the cycle of sexual violence. We work in Kenya, Zambia, and South Africa, providing holistic education, which is high school and university scholarships for survivors. We also equip our survivors through leadership development. We teach them different techniques and trainings on trauma-based healing, violence prevention, women's rights, and then we allow them to practice their leadership skills through our storytelling platforms. And our storytelling platforms are kind of like miniature conferences where we go out to partnering churches and schools and organizations to teach on how we can collaboratively work together to end sexual violence. We also do these trainings internationally where our survivors are the ones that have all the wisdom and training. And it's a very unique approach because everything, all of our programs, all of our staff, all of our lectures are survivor-led.
So what really motivated you to start this organization? And what's your passion, Nicole, behind this cause? I mean, it's not a good issue in our world. I mean, it's a real problem. And, you know, you've given your life to make a difference in a very difficult area. So what's your passion? What drives you to do this?
Yeah, so you're right in that sexual violence is very rampant. The estimate is that 1 in 3 women are survivors of sexual violence. So that's kind of puts everything in perspective where 1 in 3 women that we know, that we're friends with, our sisters and our aunties and our best friends and our cousins, 1 in 3. And so just knowing that, I think we can approach people differently. We can learn to treat people differently, and we can also learn how to empower and to equip and to help people in a different way. For me, the way that I started learning about the world and the issues of the world was through film. I have a bachelor's degree in film production. And it was through film that opened my eyes to both the beauty of the world, but also the disparities of the world. 7 years ago, I was here in Nairobi, Kenya, where I was doing my thesis film on a documentary about women who had overcome obstacles and were leading towards hope. And in the process of making this film, I was hearing so so many stories of how issues of sexual violence were directly related to lack of education. Mm. And so this was my first experience in hearing these stories, and also hearing these stories in a way that was so commonplace. And I think in my very suburban culture, I didn't hear about these stories. And so being in the world as a film producer, I was forced to kind of pull out these stories and bring them to light to expose the truth of what's happening in the world. And so in the process of creating this film, I met a young woman named Eunice. And Eunice, we were exactly the same age at the time that we met. We were 21 years old, and her birthday was only 2 weeks away from mine. And we had this very interesting connection where I realized that our commonality of age, our commonality of being a young woman, our commonality of having hopes and dreams and greater dreams for ourselves and also for our future. So we had these commonalities. We also had the difference of experience. And for her, her story is when she was 18 years old, she left the village in pursuit of work in Nairobi so that she can go to college. She had this huge dream of being the only person in her family to go to college. And so as she was traveling from the village to Nairobi, she reaches the city bus center, and she doesn't know where she is, so she's asking people around, like, hey, I'm looking for the Makadara slum. Do you know where this slum is? Because my sister lives there. So she was asking people. And being from the village, she was just completely naive and needed help to get to the Makadara slum. And so this man approached her and said, hey, I know where that Makadara slum is. I can actually help you get there. And so they traveled together to that slum, went to the supposed sister's house, knocked on the door, and there was no answer. And so the guy, he started speaking the same tribal dialect that Eunice spoke in, so culturally it's like their brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
So he's speaking to her in the Kikuyu dialect, and it turns out that he knew which village she came from. He knew some of her family members. He knew about their culture. And so she trusted him, and so he invited her to the house, and she had no food that day. She was traveling all day long. She was tired. She was exhausted. And he fed her, and he also gave her some juice. Well, it turns out that the juice was drugged. And so when she woke up in the morning, she had realized that she had been raped. And when he was still there, and she asked him, like, why did you do this to me? And he said, well, wasn't it obvious? It's because you're a woman and you're not worth anything. So you better go back to where you came from. And so she had nowhere to go but back to the village. And so as she's in the village, she thought, let me just give up my dreams of going to college and let me just become a tea farmer like my mom. So she was out in the village farming tea leaves one day when she felt super sick. And it turns out that she was pregnant. And she tried to hide this pregnancy from her family because there's a huge stigma of sexual violence everywhere in the world, but I think very strongly here in Kenya, where it is always a survivor's fault. Mm. And so when she tried to hide it for as long as she could, there was a point where she started to show. When she started to show, her father blamed her and basically accused her of being a promiscuous slut, also blamed the mother for allowing her to go to Nairobi in the first place to stick around. And the father, in an angry and drunken scene, beat up the mom and ended up breaking her arms. And so Eunice had to, like, flee this scene of domestic violence, and the father also told her, like, if you ever come back here, I'm going to kill you. I don't want you to help. So she flees back to Nairobi, to the same slum that she was raped in, where she started working as a house girl, washing laundry for people. She would fetch water for the local car washes and just be a delivery girl and bring water back and forth to the cars, to the wells. Mm-hmm. And she got to a point where she thought, you know, I can't even care for myself. How am I supposed to care for this child that I'm carrying? And so she decided to get an abortion. And so as she's in this slum abortion clinic, just imagine, you know, the slum life, you know, the equipment they use is not clean. The doctors themselves are not real doctors. As she was waiting in line to get an abortion, this fear started coming over her because a lot of young women die during unsafe abortions. And she wasn't sure if she wanted to go ahead with it. Hmm. So when it was her turn, because she was unsure, she told the woman behind her, go ahead in front of me. So finally, when all the women went through and she was the last one in the clinic, the doctor comes out and says it's her turn. And she said she heard the voice of God tell her that this baby is going to be a blessing to her. And she believed it. So she walked out of the clinic, continued to wash clothes. And so the time that she gave birth, and when she gave birth, she didn't have anything to wrap the baby in. And so the doctor had to give her the hospital sheet to wrap the baby in. And when she saw her baby, she said that she knew she made the right decision, and all of her frustrations, all of her depression, all of her stresses just seemed to melt away when she saw the face of her baby. So she went back into the slums and continued to fetch water for people, clean houses for people, wash their laundry, and raise her child in the slums. And to this day, I still don't know how she did it. She was able to save her shillings, her pennies, and she got a little bit of money from her mom. Remember, her mom's only a tea farmer. And she was able to enroll herself at Kenya Polytechnic University. And that's how I heard her story, was when she was a student there. And so when her whole story was relayed to me, I was just completely, I guess, struck at how much we identified in terms of being young, a young woman of dreams for education, but also seeing the complete separation of upbringing, where I actually acknowledged the fact that her story could easily have been mine. Had my grandparents never immigrated to America, had we still grown up in communist China, where women are not considered people at all and are usually just kind of thrown into the forest or the animals to eat. Had I been in America but grown up on the other side of the hood, her story could have easily been mine. And so I was just really struck at our similarities and also our common goals for freedom of education. And so I was in college at the time that I heard her story, and she needed about $300 to finish out that first semester of college. And during college, I was working as a wedding photographer, so I had some cash, and so I sent her that $300. And after her results came back from her very first semester in college, she was at the top of her class. And so that made me wonder, you know, how many other girls are like her that need something as simple as an education and people that believe that she can achieve those dreams. And so Freely and Hope was birthed out of dreams that are audacious, that are unexpected, but are more importantly possible. Dreams from people that have been neglected and outcast from society simply because of violence that was enacted against them, that they've been blamed for, but it was never their fault. And in giving survivors opportunity, we've seen tremendous growth where leadership actually comes from these really unexpected trenches of violence because of the experiences they've been through. They are actually more powerful and dynamic leaders. But today, Eunice is, 7 years later, Eunice is working for us as our social worker and counselor. And she handles all of our scholars in our program, all of our outreach programs. And she has just been one of the most phenomenal survivor leaders that our other scholars can look up to as a potential and hope for themselves.
Wow. So she's a living story of a transformation, obviously.
Yeah, and we have many of them.
Yeah. So we have some questions coming from some students that have sent some questions in, and Christian's got a few questions for you as well. But let me just clarify something after you telling that story. So the education piece of Freely and Hope is both to educate the victims on opportunities for transformation, as well as educating the public on the need to become advocates for people in these unfortunate, sad, terrible, awful situations, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We've seen that education is the first step to allowing survivors to have dreams again.
Okay.
A lot of times, perpetrators of violence take away those dreams by speaking lies into them. When a woman is raped, it completely, or even when young men are raped as well, it completely shatters their sense of being, where they feel safe, unsafe. Well, they feel unsafe even in their own bodies. And so education actually provides that sense of security again, where they can realize, hey, I can still achieve my dreams no matter what happens to us. So we see education as one of the first steps to transformation.
Good stuff.
Yeah, okay, Nicole, so along the lines of that educating us, we hear stories like Eunice's, and we know that Eunice has a story and she has a voice, and it seems that so often we try to give a voice to her, you know, but she already has one. So how can we really work towards practically hearing the voices of the oppressed, and how can we give them a platform to speak instead of speaking for them?
Yes, excellent question. I did bring that up in my talk at Lee, where we culturally, we have said this many times, like, we're a voice for the voiceless, speak up for the oppressed, and speak up for those who don't have a voice. But the issue is not that they don't have a voice, it's that we aren't listening well. Mm. So the practice then becomes, how can we learn to listen to the voices around us? And so that's the first step, is learning how to listen to the voices around us. And I've actually learned from my own story that listening to the voices around us is a practice of listening to our own voice as well. Practicing listening to the inner voice of God within us. And as we listen to ourselves, we're actually building confidence in ourselves where we don't need to project onto others. We don't need to, I guess, stand in place for others. But instead of standing in place for others, we're actually standing alongside of others. And so if we were to picture it that way, you know, what would it look like if we were standing alongside of survivors, so eventually when they become to a point where they're able to use their voice in the way that God ordained, we then become the platform where they're standing on our shoulders speaking for themselves and on behalf of the other survivors that they represent.
Wow. I love that analogy that we're actually not just giving them, you know, room to speak for themselves, but we're propping them up. We're giving them a solid foundation on which they can stand while they are telling their own transformation story. That's powerful, Nicole. That's powerful. And you're seeing that, you know, all the time in Nairobi, right?
Seeing it around Nairobi, seeing it in Zambia, seeing it everywhere, because when I share these stories to survivors, I can be talking to 5 people. I can be talking to 5,000 people. At least one person will come up to me and let me know that they were a survivor, and often I'm the first one that they're telling. And so it's really powerful to see how the stories of our survivors in Nairobi are actually transcending into the hearts of survivors around the world, predominantly in America, because that's where I speak mostly, and is allowing survivors in America to find freedom as well. And so this is the power of sharing stories and the power of listening well, the power of allowing people to use their own voices, and us as the receiving end, listening to that voice, learning from it, and speaking when necessary, and speaking life back into the spirit. When those types of stories are shared, we're actually united in our common humanity, and being united in our common humanity, we're able to work towards freedom. And I think that's what the kingdom of God looks like.
Yeah, so once we grasp that concept of, you know, it's not standing in their place, it's standing alongside them, how can we, particularly, you know, myself and my fellow college students, how can we practically participate in this movement to end sexual violence and oppression?
Yeah, good question. So the first step is to recognize rape culture and sexist culture. This is universal, and it's very strong in America. Especially with the current political climate that we're in, where our leader seems to devalue women and speaks about women as if they were objects. It starts there, to be honest, of changing our language of how we talk about issues of sexual violence. For example, when I was in college, my roommate was a volleyball player, super fit, you know, and in the sports culture, I was not a sports kid, so I was like, this is another world. But in sports culture, when I was around her friends, they would say things like, oh, I have a test tomorrow, I'm going to rape this test. And I was always like, oh my God, like, why would anyone want to rape a test? You know, but when this type of very violent language is so integrated in our culture, where we use it as slang,
yeah,
or we use it as something flippantly, and we're not even thinking who might be in the room that hears that and becomes triggered. Mm-hmm. Well, you're not listening to the fighters. You're not valuing the voices in the room. So it starts there, recognizing rape culture, sexist culture, not being a bystander to it, but noticing when your friends use that type of language, when someone might say something that's sexist, when someone might make a derogatory comment about your friend's miniskirt, when someone devalues a woman's worth instead of empowering it, that is actually perpetuating the cycle of you do nothing. And so the challenge is then to stand up against it and to be vocal and be like, you know, that's not appropriate to say. Like, don't say that anymore. Another thing around language is how we talk about race culture and how we talk about the victims. So in our culture, in Freely and Hope, we don't use language as labels.
Oh, okay.
We don't say the word victim. We don't say the word orphan. We don't say the word prostitute. Instead, it would be someone who is victimized, or a child who has been orphaned, or a woman who is working in prostitution. That way, it shows that the dignity of the person is innate, regardless of what has ever happened to them. Mm. They could be orphaned, they could be victimized, they can work in prostitution, but they are never the labels that people or society or trauma has placed on them. And so what we do in our organization is we remove those labels and remind them that they are people. They are children of God, dearly beloved. They are young women, they are dreamers, they are business people, they are lawyers, they are professionals. They are ultimately women, and they are mothers, and they are loved just because of the way that they are. And so reminding them of their inherent worth and dignity also helps shape language, not only for the culture around us, but also for the survivors themselves, where instead of identifying as victims, they're able to imagine themselves as survivors, and they eventually can have the potential to live into that trajectory. And so those are some practical ways around language. Another way is through friendship, listening. If there's a situation where your friend comes out to you, you know, and instead of going into problem-solving mode, instead of asking them questions like, well, what were you wearing? Instead of asking them, what were you doing there? Just being present and telling them that you believe them is the biggest shift, because culture also, again, blames the victim, right? And so if we can be the friend that doesn't blame, but actually believes their story, that is one of the first steps to healing for a survivor. And so allowing them to tell their story in a safe and secure place, if we could be the friends that provide that safe and secure place as a form of advocacy, as a form of empathy, that's where the healing can begin.
Hmm. Nicole, I'm listening to you and can only imagine, like some of our listeners, what they might be feeling, because this is overwhelming in a lot of ways. This is a lot of emotions rise with my own heart and my own mind when I'm listening to you tell these stories and, you know, the up close personal real life face that comes with this. So let me shift the thinking for just a minute in the frame of a question, because I know you're a person of faith. I know you have, you know, an unashamed relationship with Jesus Christ and, you know, share that freely and often. So how do you maintain your faith in the face of such tragedy? You know, how do we shift people towards a loving God when a loving God was fully aware of what was happening and, for lack of a better reality, didn't stop it in the process per se?
Yeah, well, and to be honest, this is a question that I ask God a lot. And what I've learned is that it's a journey of experiencing deep and tremendous pain. Because what the experience of deep pain allows us to do is it allows us to feel the wounds of God's own heart. And as we're in those places where we feel the wounds of God's own heart, we are invited into a greater sense of joy, of love, of healing. And in the moments that I'm in that deep pain and woundedness, I forget often, very often. I become angry, become frustrated. We're working so hard with the police and the lawyers and all these things, and sometimes it does seem futile. But let me tell you that even though I've only been working on this for seven years, I have seen enough trajectories where the hope is always present, even in the times that we can't see it. Mm. I've seen enough stories of transformation that have come out of incredible pain that I can't even repeat verbally. And because I've seen enough of these stories, I still have hope for the stories that are not yet. And I feel like that's what hope is, right? Like, having faith is hope. Faith is being evidence of the things that we cannot see. And so if we're able to place that hope in a God who is all loving and pushing through the pain enough, the hope is that we will actually experience the fullness of joy, but we can only experience it if we enter into the pain and woundedness. Mm. That's the first thing I've learned. And then secondly, the practices. My practices of faith have been saved, literally, by contemplative prayer practices.
By what?
Contemplative prayer.
Okay.
And the contemplative prayer, what it has taught me was it has taught me a form of prayer that is without words and that is actually beyond words. It's because of the traumas that I've experienced secondhand and the stories that I've heard that I am unable to repeat. Those things often don't have language around it because it is so tremendously painful. And so contemplative prayer is an act of sitting in the stillness, solitude and silence of that pain and being with God in that pain. And then being in the presence of God, that pain is eventually, not immediately, but eventually transformed into the fullness of joy where there is only love and light. So these practices I have had to learn and have had to practice. That's why we call them practices, because it's very difficult to sit in these places of immense tension and pain. But there is actually where we find God in the midst of it, because he is, I believe, even more present in the pain, because, again, those are the invitations to receive his joy and his fullness and the hope that he brings out of it.
Wow. So we only have a few minutes left on the episode, Nicole. I want to ask you just a couple more questions. And the first one is, what would you say to somebody who right now is a victim of sexual abuse, sexual crime, they're being preyed upon and mistreated, and we may not ever get an audience with them, but they may pick up on this podcast and they may be listening today to this person who is all the way across on the other side of the world, but yet speaking directly to them. So what would you say to somebody who is a victim in this situation? What do they need to do right now?
So April, this month, is actually Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and one of my staff members, who is a survivor of prostitution, wrote a few articles that you can find on our website, cleaninghope.org, on how we can heal from trauma, also how we can be better advocates with people who have experienced trauma. And she gives 8 steps for survivors. And the first is admit the fact that it has happened, understand that it's not your fault, seek medical attention and justice, see a counselor, reach out to someone you trust, join a support group, and pay attention to the changes in your body that are caused by triggers. Learn to forgive in time, though difficult, it will give your heart, mind, and peace. And finally, speak out about it. And so for the survivors that are listening, we want to let you know that you are not alone. So find that safe space where you can speak out about it, because until you speak out about it, the perpetrator still has power over you. Reclaim your power and speak out against it in a safe space. And I'm sure Lee University has a lot of places and teachers and counseling centers that you can do that well. If you feel like you can't do it well there, feel free to email us. We are always available for them. You are not alone. We're a community of survivors worldwide that uplift each other in our common stories.
Okay, Nicole, last question for this episode. Probably the toughest question of all today, because we do know that God loves the abused and he also loves the abuser. He loves the perpetrator. He loves the person who is causing injustices in the world and wants to reach them as well. So what would you say to somebody who is listening to this today and they've come to the harsh reality that they are the person who is mistreating someone else? What might you say to them to help them in this journey?
Well, actually, for the perpetrator, the steps are exactly the same. What we see is that hurt people.
Mm-hmm.
And so perpetrators that are listening, the racists that are listening, you're better than that, you know? Like, whatever violence is enacted out against someone else is always a result of the violence that you're enacting within yourself. And so the steps are the same. Admit that you're not in a healthy place. Admit that something's happened to you. And talk about that as well. And seek help for it, because it's not too late to be saved. Actually, I think, you know, telling that story would be your own saving grace if you're able to come forth with it. Because you still got your whole life ahead to live in freedom. We desire all people to be free, both survivors and perpetrators. And survivors and perpetrators are also caught in some sort of bondage, hatred, self-affliction that they need to be free from.
Wow. Got a little difference. I mean, a little difficulty with the connection for just a minute there. Will you repeat that last statement that you believe that there's hope that both who can be free? How did you say that again, Nicole?
Yeah, we believe that both survivors and perpetrators can be free.
Wow.
And for the perpetrators, it's the same. It's the same violence that you enact on others that you enact on yourself. And so we desire freedom for you too, where that violence is no longer enacted on yourself.
Wow.
Or that rage, or that anger, or that hatred is healed, even within yourself, so that instead of hurting others, you might be a healer for others.
Wow. Nicole, I really appreciate you taking time. And I'm telling you, this is a very difficult issue in many ways, but we believe it's a story that needs to be shared and needs to be told. So for those listeners who might want to connect with, you know, your organization, with Freely in Hope, how can they get connected to you? And maybe somebody wants to support this, you know, in some way to help you continue to advance the work for the cause of the kingdom of God. What are some ways they can connect with you guys?
Yeah, so the best way to connect with us is online through our website, freelyinhope.org. You can email us at info@freelyinhope.org. If you want to email me directly, you can email me at Nicole, NIKOLE@freelyinhope.org. Again, always listening here. And we share our stories among our staff and survivors so we can pray with you, listen to your story, hear your story, and find common goals of encouragement. Our blog has a lot of resources as well for both survivors and for advocates that want to work together. And if you're a survivor or an advocate that want to continue providing holistic educational opportunities and freedom for survivors in Kenya, Zambia, and South Africa, you are free to give through our website, through our donation page. It costs about $1,000 to fund a high school student for an entire year.
Wow.
And about $1,000 for a university student for an entire year. So I know for me, when I went to a private university in LA, I was like, $3,000 is like an hour in my university class.
Yeah.
So if you break that down to increments, it's not much. And so education, like I said, is one of the first steps to finding, for survivors finding dignity again and allowing them the opportunity to dream again. And so we want to encourage you to allow other survivors to dream again. Through your giving, so take a look at our website.
Nicole, thank you so much, and we're definitely going to promote that, and we'll put all the information in our narrative, you know, when we air the episode, to let people be able to go there as well. But I really appreciate you taking time, and man, you're on the forefront of transformation and making change, and when we pray for you, Nicole, and your team, and Eunice, and all of those that are connected, because we believe that you're doing the good stuff, and that God really, really, you know, we want to align with you in what God's doing and support, you know, God's work there as well. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I mean, this work is only through the power of prayer. I will say that this is a spiritual battle, and I look forward to continuing the conversation with folks at Lee. So thank you so much.
Good deal. Thank you, Nicole. Take care.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. I hope you stay with us. We'll be right back with some final thoughts and our closing challenge on Servcast. All right, and we're back on Servcast.
Hey, Christian. Man, what an awesome conversation. I say awesome. I don't know if awesome is the right word. What a very difficult topic. Said so well by someone who is living this out every day.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's definitely presents a real challenge, you know, for us in our daily lives, because we know that this is happening all over the world daily, you know. So it's a real challenge for us. What do we do, you know?
I think the piece that spoke very, very loud, I think, to people was the ongoing challenge that she has with faith. Now, Nicole unashamedly committed, you know, has committed her life to Jesus and speaks about him all the time. But yet she talked about that she even has this ongoing struggle with God on a daily basis because of the difficulty of this issue.
Right. I think that's common in all of our lives. You know, no matter what struggle we face, I think that even if we've committed our life to Jesus Christ, we still struggle with our faith. That's just human nature. You know, we're doubtful beings. But I think it's really encouraging to see someone like Nicole that's doing what she's doing, and she's living in these situations, and she still has such a committed faith to Jesus Christ. It's really encouraging.
And I don't know if you caught it or not. I'm sure you did. But for our listeners that are tuning in today, she was exposed to the reality of this horrible situation of sexual violence while she was in college to help someone else through their own personal journey, and committed to do that while she was in college, and then it's now her lifestyle. So for you folks that are in college, what are you taking away from that about being able to hear the voice of God even while you're in this learning stage trying to pursue for your own personal, you know, goals and hopes and dreams? I mean, where's God play in all of this stuff?
Right. I think it kind of set off an alarm for me when she said, you know, one in every three women is a victim of sexual violence. And that's all women. So that means that on this campus, that statistic holds, you know, so that's hard to hear. At a place like Lee University, we don't want to think about that, but you know, it's real. I think that, that presents a challenge to us as college students. You know, she said that we really need to be recognizing rape culture. You know, this isn't something that we can brush aside. We need to be talking about this, and we need to be recognizing that it happens. But God has a higher plan than ours, and he'll use this for a purpose.
Pause.
Yeah, you know, what really stands out to me is what Nicole said about how one in every three women is a victim of sexual violence. And that's just alarming to me, you know? That means that all of these women that are surrounding me, I need to be aware of this statistic, you know, and I need to be on my guard. It's just crazy to think that it's so prevalent in our world. So I think one of the really important things that Nicole said was to recognize the sexual culture as it surrounds us. You know, it's not like this is irrelevant. It's a real issue in our world, you know, so we need to be recognizing it. We can't brush it aside. This is something that needs to be up front in our lives, and we need to be talking about this.
And I think, too, as we get ready to close this segment or this episode, one of the things that I think it's very important to hear today, Kristen, is that, and she said it, you know, we believe that there is hope for both the victim or the person who, you know, is being mistreated or abused, survivor is the term I think that they prefer to use, as well as the perpetrator, you know,
right.
Both the offender and the offended. God has care and love in his heart for all of us, no matter who we are, no matter where we come from, no matter what our story is. And I think another point that was very powerful was her commenting on the reality that hurt people hurt people. So, as always on Servcast, we will say this, we're made for more. Now, I realize that all of us, those of us that are listening, those of you that might be listening to us, and those of us that come into Studio 22 on a regular basis and you know, do these podcasts so that we can encourage you in this business of caring for one another and making a difference in the world, that every one of us has some level of hurt within us. All of us have some level of difficulty and challenge. And probably most people in the world at some point have issues of shame, you know, that have trailed behind them at some level. And so I want to encourage us today to be reminded exactly what Nicole said. Either side of the street you're on, if you're a survivor, if you're in the process of you know, this difficulty and this unheard of actions and treatment against you, or if you're the person who is the abuser, you're the person who is hurting other people, hey, wake up, pay attention, admit that this is not something you're sleeping and dreaming about. This is a unfortunate, harsh, sad reality, and there is hope. And so why don't you encourage our audience today on the power of transformation, Christian, and that the reality that God does love them.
Yeah, wow. That's one of my big things that I'll find myself thinking about all the time of, wow, God's love really washes me clean. You know, whatever I bring to him and lay at his feet, he'll take it and he'll wash me clean of it. You know, so his love is just transformative, and there's no sin and no shame that's too great for him to bear.
Hey guys, until we catch you next time on Surfcast, remember you're made for more. And I know this was a sobering conversation, so take time, let it settle in, and most of all, be an advocate for change and be a rescuer of the hurting. Have a great day. Catch you next time.
Hey, thanks again for joining us today on Servcast for this conversation with Nicole Lim. Be sure to check out her work and the work of her organization. You can do that by visiting their website. It's freelyinhope.org. You can just scroll down to the notes for this show and there'll be a link down there. If you liked what you heard today, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so by emailing us at servcast22, that's servcast22, @gmail.com. Again, we appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next time in Studio 22.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Servcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Servcast are those of William Lamb, Tyler Shores, their guests, and no one else. Until next time, this is Servcast, signing off from Studio 22.